Welcome to Blood, Sweat and Fears, the ultimate podcast where athletes, Olympians and sports people reflect on the challenges of elite sport, both whilst participating and beyond. I'm Mark Clement. Alongside me is Scott Ward, one of four footballing brothers and a man who spent more than a decade working on the content that now makes up EY's personal performance programme, Building a Better Working World, and indeed this podcast. And it's time to hear part two of our edition of Blood, Sweat and Fears with a guest who's had quite an 18 months. It started with her captaining England's netball team to Commonwealth Gold. A couple of months ago, it saw her being awarded the MBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours. Unfortunately, just before that, the woman described as netball's Harry Kane by the Times, with over 100 caps to her name, failed to make the cut for her country's 12-strong squad for the World Cup, where England finished third and Amara Bueze worked as a media pundit.
You said that you described netball as not being the be-all and end-all. You are a qualified lawyer, but is it hard not to get sucked in when you're playing sport at the level that you have been, i.e. for it to consume you and everything else falls by the wayside?
Yeah, I think it's hard to separate the two. And I think if you want to be an elite performer, you do have to give everything and focus, and it's not that easy. And I think I mentioned the daily training environment in Australia. They are that good and they are number one in the world because they have so many players who are at such a good level and standard that they can pick any of them. And that's because of the focus that they have in club netball. And we still have a way to go with that in the UK. But I think across the board in sports, people give 100%. And to do that, you can't be sort of filling some time here and filling some time there. And I think there are some special people who can do that, but there's not many. I'm lucky that I've got my legal qualification to fall back on, but I've sort of let that fall by the wayside, so to speak. So everything
still excite you? That is it something you do want to go back to, or has everything that's happened to you with your sporting career actually usurped that and made you think about whether you want to be a lawyer?
It scares me, law does. And I think because with netball...
It scares you when you're a lawyer. It scares me and I'm not.
I've done netball for so long that it's almost innate in me. And so I know exactly what I'm doing. I can, if anyone who asks me questions, I can have a conversation with them and explain things. And in law, I feel like I'm an unqualified undergraduate. And so I'll be coming in right at the bottom. And I think it's not... I always want to be the best, even when I'm playing my 4-year-old nephew at racing cars. I want to beat him. And it's not in my nature to be new and inexperienced. And that's basically what law is offering me. So I need a job. So it's there. But I think it's going to take a while for me to gain
confidence. Wait a sec. You went on to captain your country to a historic Commonwealth Gold. So surely there is plenty of stuff you can take into your profession drawing from that experience. Surely. If you can achieve all that in sport, imagine what you can achieve quite quickly through your profession.
I don't know if it's quite quickly, because netball, I got my first cap in 2001 and we won a Commonwealth Games gold in 2018. So yeah, it's taken a long time.
Yeah, okay.
And there's a lot
of people... I mean, take all that benefit of all that meandering path and use that skill set to quite quickly progress through the law profession.
Yeah,
that's what I
mean. It's straight. I feel like I don't look at it in the same regard as you. I just see
Well, that's
it as...
why it's good to have a chat with Scott and I to try and get a different perspective, isn't it?
It's so incredibly common, and that's probably the largest bit of trepidation for athletes. And obviously we've all been there, everyone in this room has been there, where the thought and the principle of starting at the bottom of the ladder is scarier because you're used to holding a persona and an expectation from people in your sport, whereas when you walk into a different building, That's not what they see. They see you as a new starter, and okay, you need to learn the ropes. And I think that's natural. It's natural to be fearful of something that is now unknown to you, because as you said, your netball career has surpassed that. But it doesn't mean that that's how it's going to be. And it's also very feasible for you not to want to do that anymore, because when you go through life and you have different challenges, it changes the lens that you look through. And so giving yourself the opportunity of freedom of choice is just as important as saying, I'm going to do this, but I don't want to do that, because that's fantastic. If you say, do you know what, actually, I don't want to start at the bottom anymore. And for example, you know, you're looking to open a wider forum around body confidence in kids and inspiring young girls and women to do what they need to do. There's not enough of that in the world. There's not the opportunity to speak freely around, I want to do this because I've said so. There's always a stereotype that's attached to something that somebody wants to do or a gender. That's not the world we live in anymore. And so, you know, while you're not teaching law or practicing law, you're still teaching the principles that you've learned by in addressing other issues. So all of that great work you've done before isn't lost. You're just revamping it into a different voice. And so, you know, it's not wasted time. What you've learned in netball has given you the platform to elevate that voice. And I think, again, it's just something that you should look to continue with, because there isn't enough of that. There isn't enough in sport of young girls wanting to do more, wanting to be competitive, because that's not a word that's often used for young girls, being competitive in sport. So please, long may it continue. It's brilliant.
Yeah, well, I do quite a bit of charity work and I still want to do that. And I actually, a couple of days ago, I spoke to someone who works for a charity, because basically I'd like to form a lobby group which lobbies government, because we obviously have issues with the NHS and obesity and nutrition, and everyone's trying to figure out how they can plough money into the NHS. But actually, if we sort out the problem at the start, we don't need the money to put into the NHS. So PE in schools is suffering in terms of content and time. And so if we get that sorted, then actually it will have ongoing benefits. But I think because every government's only in for a minimum of 4 years, they sort of want short-term things and short-term goals. And so actually, I feel like there needs to be some sort of longevity plan so that for 30 years or so, or maybe 10 years, 30 is a bit much, but for a longer period than 4 years, there's a plan for how you can help improve PE and education in schools, and it will have a long-term effect on mental health. Hopefully social media can tie into it, and then physicality and basically health. And so hopefully that's something that I want to use my voice to try and get off the ground and get working, because there's lots of charities and companies, people doing it, but they're almost siloed. And so actually I think a collective voice is better. So if I can use my voice and lend it to that and get some positive outcome, that would be amazing.
Yeah, the problem is, of course, those things don't necessarily pay the bills. So how does AMA monetize? Clearly, you know, we've heard what she wants to achieve. How does she go about monetizing that? Does that fit into EY's program at all? Guidance as to how you would do that?
Our program is very much about preventative action. So it's helping athletes and people understand their skill attributes to align with their long-term ambitions. And so I think, like anything, if you're doing something you love and you have a plan and you know what that story needs to look like, the monetization of what you then want to do will take care of itself, because you have a narrative that you're working towards and you're not drifting in the wind, which is obviously where we find ourselves. You'll go from one thing to the next, hoping that that's going to be the success story for you to hang your coat on. And one thing that you can't cheat, and it's the same in sport, is preparation and readiness for what you need to prepare and what you need to put into that. And obviously the group you're working with at the moment are great at helping you understand that narrative, that story, and how that can then align to what you need to do to appease those needs and wants that as a consequence pay you. And there's not a Willy Wonka golden ticket that means you retire from sport or you're still an active athlete and then you have a business and all of a sudden you become a millionaire. It's the world we live in, not so much netball, but in other sports, you can get that freedom of money quite quickly. But what we call, you know, in terms of the real world, you can't cheat preparation and education and surrounding yourself with good people that share your commonality, that are there for you and will help you build those building blocks that then give you the opportunity of choice. But you've already begun that. You've had a tough summer. You know what resilience looks like from a personal aspect, because we often talk about sporting resilience. While there are parallels, it's not the same as dealing with things as an individual. But you now have an idea of, like you said about your Seven Stars coach, what good is starting to look like for you in your new guise. And that's a great place to be. So, you know, for us, it's about giving people the soft skills, the opportunity of choice, but being in a conscious place so that you can make decisions with real clarity that then will sustain you for the next 10, 20, 30 years, not just today or tomorrow.
A quite well-known football manager, pal of mine, said he likes to, for every sort of five good things that happen in his career, he actually likes a bad one to come along. Not a catastrophic bad one, but the process actually helps to ground him and let him dig his feet in and go again. Of course, when you're in the eye of the needle, when you're in the middle of that horrible one, you can't see that. It's only when you get further down the line that you realise it was a brilliant stepping stone to a brighter future.
Yeah, definitely. And my mum always says everything happens for a reason. And I do believe that. And I think, as you say, you just have to get to the end of it and then you can look back and say, actually, that was a blessing and this has happened because of it. And so I kind of am I think my non-selection was a blessing. I'm just still working my way through it. And I know it will stand me in good stead later on when I get to the end of the...
You have also spoken before about calling on governing bodies to make women more comfortable having children during their careers. Mm. This is an issue you feel very strongly about.
Yeah, I think it's a tough thing. There's lots of things, I think, now that I've come in close to the end of my life as a sports person, lots of things that I didn't know about when I started, which probably would have been good. And I think one of the things is having children. So obviously, being a female, we carry the children. I think everyone just assumes it's going to be simple to have a child and you'll just come to the end of your career and want to have a child as and when and it will happen. And that might not necessarily be the case. And so actually, I think educating young girls at the start of their careers to say, this might happen, this might not happen, these are your options, would be a good thing. And then I think there's recently been things in the media about females who've had babies and struggled with sponsors and top sponsors who you'd think would support them who haven't. And then also just, I think Serena Williams went through something about rankings, points and having time off to have babies. And so it's quite surprising that these things are only just coming up now because women have been having babies since man came along. And so these things have always just been issues, but I guess we've now finding our voices. And so it will be nice for me to know, I guess, in netball or any sport, that we've started to deal with those things so that in 10 or 20 years' time, when someone's finishing their elite or non-elite career, mm-hmm. that they know exactly where they stand. They know if, let's say, for example, they might want to freeze their eggs or check their fertility or things like that. So I think people talk about sporting education and educate you in terms of what you should and shouldn't eat and those kind of things. And now I think we're starting to steer towards mental health support. But actually, there's a whole plethora of things that are great at you need to support an athlete. And so those things should all be incorporated. And so I think for talking about females having babies, but men as well, like training that they do might affect their testosterone levels and their sperm count and those kind of things. And so actually, at the time when you start, you might not necessarily be thinking about children or the future other than I want to win a medal or I want to get selected. And there's someone who has a responsibility to do that thinking for you at the time so that when it comes to the time when you actually need to have those things in place, they were already in place from the outset.
I mean, it's a very real human cost and sacrifice, isn't it? The sort of issues we talk. I mean, you must have had teammates, you must have pals who've really had to compromise their personal lives because their sporting careers were at such a peak. Effectively, they didn't want to take their eye off the ball. They didn't want to drop out even for a couple of years.
Perhaps they weren't allowed to.
Yeah,
you know, it's not always freedom of choice, right?
So, and I think that's in netball because it's not massively financially rewarded. I think a lot of prior to sort of my era, lots of players played, and then when they also then got a job. So they went to university, got a job, and then when the job couldn't balance with netball, they would, and then they started to think, oh, I might have children. They would just retire from netball and go and work and have a family. And so it's not really been an issue so as much because people just left the sport. And actually, you've lots of people who are very skillful and potentially could have contributed to England winning a Commonwealth or World Cup medal a lot earlier than we have done. And so you don't necessarily want to lose those people to the sport. You want to be able to support them so that they can have a choice and do what they actually really want to do.
Mm. To wrap things up, I've got to ask you what you've learned about yourself over the past year and a half, and also what advice you would give to somebody that perhaps goes through a similar, did I use the word jolt earlier?
Yeah. I don't know necessarily that I've learned anything new. I think being an elite athlete, I think I know myself very well, physically, mentally. It's not something that I've learned. I'm not very good at asking for help or relying on people or accepting people's help. And I think I got to the point where I didn't have a choice but to rely on people and take their support. And so I probably have got a better understanding of relying on people and asking for things if you need some support. I'm not the best. I'm still happy to say I can do it myself, and actually knowing deep down that I can't. But I think asking people for advice, I think now anyone I meet, I just start talking to them about what they do and just getting information from people, because you never know what tiny piece of advice someone might say to you. And it might not even be advice, you're just having a conversation. So I think just clawing information from people is a really key thing.
The sponge principle.
Yeah, definitely.
Little bit from there, little bit from there, little bit from there, drops into your bottle of wisdom and becomes
exactly.
Part of your mix.
Exactly. And I think you don't necessarily know what might need that drop of wisdom. And so I might have spoken to you today and something didn't really resonate, but then in 3 years' time, I will suddenly think, oh, I've heard this piece of information. And so you never know.
Don't point at me when you do that. This is highly unlikely. Scott, for definite. But me personally, that is highly unlikely. Unless it's how to consume our rider of chocolate banana cake or something like that. But I take your point.
I thought you were going to say how it's to brush your hair. No?
Do you see what she did there?
That was strong.
Yeah, that was very strong, wasn't it? I'll just sit here as a figure of ridicule. And advice? A piece of advice to give to somebody going through a...
Before you answer that,
yeah. Oh.
Two pieces. So obviously you've gone from being part-time to now, and now the new generation are being full-time athletes. What advice would you give them in not having to face, if you like, the struggles of weighing up, if you like, a professional life away from sport and in sport, whereas this will now be all that they know? What advice would you give them in handling that level of expectation, but also the livelihood, the living that will come with it?
I think it's really difficult because in netball, they're classed as full-time, but the actual money that they receive isn't necessarily full-time money. And so I think it's a really difficult transition time. And I guess I'm thankful to my parents for constantly saying, when are you getting a proper job and do stuff outside of netball? Because you do need something to fall back on. And even if you have an amazing and glittering career, at some stage you might get injured or something might happen. And so you do need something to fall back on. I think also for myself, I don't necessarily like focusing on one thing. And so even when I was a full-time player in Australia and New Zealand, I always wanted something else to do because I need my mind to be ticking and I need to constantly be thinking. And so I would always go and either get a legal job or do some work experience or just do something. And so even if those players aren't going to go into formal education and think about what they're going to do in the future, I'd say find somewhere to channel some energy outside of the sport that you're doing, because it can be very hard work and draining to just live, breathe, eat your sport and be around the people who you're with all the time. So I'd say find an avenue outside of what you're doing and explore it.
And actually, I'm going to amend my final question. What advice would you give yourself? Not just here to play the village idiot. That was a half-intelligent question, wasn't it?
Because you had time to think about it.
Yes, I did.
I would say to myself, I think probably allow myself time to heal. I've gone through a lot. I think probably I haven't even celebrated the Commonwealth Games win, which was massive. I think for 20 years of my life, England netball have been saying, we're going to win a medal, we're going to win a medal. And you kind of half believe it, but then we won. And I think the first interview I did when we did win and I stepped off court was to an Australian media channel, and they were like, oh my gosh, you've beaten Australia, as in how could that have happened? And I instantly said, oh, it was just for now, like we beat them today, but actually the World Cup's next year and we don't know what's going to happen, and almost apologetically English. And actually I should have just celebrated at the time in the moment, we just beat you, we won. And so I was straight away just looking to what's next, what do I have to do next? And I think my life is generally, I think you asked me about something in December, and I was like, it's December's next month, I've got to do
well,
here and
there. It wasn't just something, was it? It was going to receive your MBE. Finishing the year by going to the palace to receive your MBE.
Yeah, but in my mind, that's next month, and this month I've got so many things to get to, and after this I'm going to something else. And so I feel like I live my life very much, what have I got to do now, and how's that going to help me move forward? And so I probably would advise myself to try and live in the moment a bit more and then celebrate things, because I'm not, I think as an athlete, you're constantly looking, okay, what's next? I've done this training session. What do I need to eat? How much protein? This, that, and the other. And so I think I need to become less athlete and more normal person and celebrate things here and now.
Emma, we've loved having you with us, and Scott would like to apologise for upsetting you a little bit earlier.
I accept financial payment, also gluten-free treats when I'm not training, obviously.
That's it for this episode of Blood, Sweat and Fears. Thanks to Emma and to Scott, obviously, and thanks to you for listening. Many more big names to come from a huge range of athletes, sports people and indeed sports in future episodes. And don't forget to check out previous podcasts, including with Dame Tanny Gray-Thompson's and Matt Pinsent and Ryan Giggs. We're on iTunes and via the EY website by visiting ey.com/UK/PAS/podcast. Feel free to rate, to comment, to share. For more information about the programme, you can visit the website, that's ey.com/UK/personal-performance-programme. I'm Mark Clement, brought to you by EY, building a better working world. Thanks for listening to the latest episode of Blood, Sweat and Fears, the ultimate podcast with a focus on athlete experiences, readiness and preparation for life in and out of sport. Goodbye.